Hello. Today is January 21st, 2006. My name is Tucker Axon, and I'm with Robert Price. Robert was the first American to test to black belt and Lotus, and he has been kind enough to give us his interview. Thank you, Robert.
You're welcome.
I want to start out asking you, I know that you've had a varied martial arts background. When did you first start your martial arts training?
Well, I first started in 1968 when I was assigned to Osan Air Force Base when the Air Force decided to send me over from Peshkawa, Japan. The North Koreans had grabbed the Pueblo, and many of us found our heads swimming while we ended up in Korea. And in Korea, I found Tan Soro, and under the instruction of T.S. Kim, I decided to join the studio there.
Okay. The Air Force sent you to Korea, and they also sent you to Ubon, Thailand. Can you tell me a little about how you were stationed there?
Well, while I was in Korea, I was promoted to my first degree black belt in 1969. And in 1970, my second year in Korea, I was awarded my second degree black belt and returned to the United States, reassigned at Duluth Air Force Base in Minnesota. In Duluth, I was teaching Tan Soro to the local YWCA and YMCA, and in the base gym. And then all of a sudden, I received orders to Vietnam, but those orders got changed due to a base commander's decision not to send me to Vietnam after request of some city officials. And instead, he knew he had to reassign me, but he didn't want to make the city officials concerned, so he sent me to Thailand instead. That was a very good lucky stroke for me because I ended up in Ubon, Thailand. Upon arriving in Ubon, Thailand, I actually joined the Taekwondo studio on base, but it really wasn't what I wanted. I was supposed to originally have brought in Kung Soo to Thailand based upon the Grand Master's request. When I found out that was not authorized by the government of Thailand, I figured that well, I would try to maybe find Thai kickboxing as an art, but I might look into it. And I heard about some Thai kickboxing studios that a couple of the other Taekwondo students and I wanted to watch. So we were downtown and we stumbled across Preacher Mahachanavan School of Kempo. And so I said, well, this isn't Muay Thai kickboxing, but let's go in and check it out anyway. So we went in, and the first thing I saw was what I didn't believe was Kempo. I was familiar with Kempo, and what I was looking at was more Muay Thai kickboxing, and a phenomenal man, short, stocky, extremely fast, high jumper, teaching these kicks to, basically it was, I had walked into the American class, and it was very small. Matter of fact, it only consisted of, let me think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, no more than 10 students. And in an American class, I'd heard that the Thai class, which was about maybe 25 students, had just been completed. He had separated the classes. And we had walked into the American portion. That appealed to me after watching. I figured there's a lot within this Kempo as it was being taught that I had found in Korean Tang Sudo. The rolling, the folding, the throwing, the leg sweeps, the Muay Thai kick boxing aspects that was incorporated in it really intrigued me. But I was still tied up with Taekwondo on base. And knowing the Koreans, I knew if the Taekwondo instructor found that I was studying downtown, at the same time studying with him, that would not be so good. So my buddies and I joined Preacher Mahachanavan during the evening and studied Taekwondo on base during the day. And then all of a sudden, about 2 months later, 3 months later, Preacher decides that he wants to bring and show and attract the base population to downtown Lotus and asked us to do a demonstration. And he asked me to be there and help narrate it since I spoke English. And I was now familiar with the techniques and so forth. Along that 3 months, he had refined his Kempo school to his own art of Muay Thai kickboxing, Lotus self-defense, and much of what he had modified within his art was flavored with the Tang Sudo that I helped bring to him. It was his agreement that if I would assist him in the organizational skills and maybe the belt structure and the requirements for each belt that I had seen in the Tang Sudo system, that he would develop his own art. And so now we had the Lotus. It was our first time going on to the base. Just prior to that, we had had a demonstration downtown for some city officials, and they had decided that Lotus would be the art of Thailand, and they told and promoted Preacher to the Minister of Self-Defense for all of Thailand. And that's what opened his freedom, if you will, to now go on the base, because he didn't have any discourse about not being an official to do so. So we decided to go on base and do a demonstration, and sure enough, as luck would have it, my Korean instructor stumbled upon the demonstration.
Mr. Parks?
Mr. Parks. And at that point, Mr. Parks, I could see that he was very dissatisfied that many of his students and myself were now involved in the Lotus downtown, and supposedly the Lotus would stay downtown, and Mr. Parks had the monopoly on the base. And we had broken that taboo. Mr. Parks was not a happy man. He called me in the next day, and amongst other things that he told me, he said that he was going to remove all of my ranking from Tang Sudo by sending my ID cards, which he had confiscated earlier, for my first meeting with him, to my instructor in Korea and demand that all of my ranking be removed and that I no longer be part or considered part of Tang Sudo. He had removed my name from his roster of students in the Taekwondo class, and at that point I figured, okay, I've lost everything. I might as well dedicate myself to the Lotus. And after that point, Lotus was it. Lock, stock, and barrel, two times a day, whenever we could make it down. We would join the Thai class as well as the American class whenever we could.
So Mr. Parks was a little upset that some of the American students were also taking Lotus classes.
I would say more than a little upset, because he had the monopoly on all of the Americans studying martial arts in Thailand until Preacher was officially put in charge of all the martial arts, which put Preacher over Mr. Parks, according to the Thai government, because we were under martial law. And that didn't fly well at all. So I never heard from my instructor. And until I made my black belt. And then I contacted my instructor in Korea and said, I made my black belt in Lotus. He said, send me your black belt certificate. I did. He wrote me back and said, I burned it. You are talking to them, never forget it.
Did you have to get another certificate from Ajahn
Pai? I sure did. So I replaced that certificate and explained it to Ajahn, Preacher Mahachanavan, and he kind of laughed at it, and he says, you know, that's understandable. And so shortly thereafter, I came back to the States and decided that I would go ahead and teach the Lotus any place that I could. I started at the YMCA and the USO in the United States in Victorville, California in 1972.
Okay, now you know, you can gain valuable stuff from every martial art. And I know that you gained many valuable things from your Tang Sudo and even your Taekwondo training. But what was it about the Lotus class that caught your attention and encouraged you to quit training eventually in Taekwondo and dedicate your time to the Lotus class?
I think it was the grappling aspect, a lot of it. The rolling, the throwing, the falling, the judo and jiu-jitsu aspect of it, as well as Muay Thai kickboxing in its original state is not an art. It is a war type of an effort where strikes to the joints are devastating. The elbow strikes, the knee strikes are just devastating. They're not a competition art. And Tung Sido didn't have that aspect to it. So this added to my prior training. It gave me a more rounded aspect of what I wanted to find in the martial arts. I didn't have a chance to study Kempo, Hapkido, or Kempo, to add some other aspects of the hard style of Tung Sido. And therefore, for that reason, when I saw this, it was like I had the second opportunity to study something like Kempo, not Kempo, but Hapkido. That this was my second opportunity to grasp that kind of a training, as well as the hard aspect of Tung Sido.
And you had mentioned earlier that it was apparent that Mr. Preacher was not teaching Kempo alone.
That's why I keep getting the word Kempo mixed up with Hapkido. What I saw more in his art was a Hapkido type aspect. There was very little Kempo per se that I knew as Kempo, having been exposed to it while I was in the United States and before, that I could identify this is Kempo. It looked more like Hapkido, with the rolls, the throws, the locks that he had borrowed from Judo and Jiu-Jitsu, and the Muay Thai kickboxing was, basically he would use the Muay Thai kickboxing to disable a subject, and then he would use the other arts to overcome them. But it usually was the fact that he would use his Muay Thai, again, to make a disablement or to get control, to stop an aggression, and then he would revert to the other arts to really polish it off, so to speak. When he saw the hard kicks, the spinning back kick, the wheel kicks, the reverse roundhouse, and the back leg side kicks out of Tung Sido, he thought that would be a good addition to the way Muay Thai kickboxers kick when they're fully executed and all their power and so forth. If they miss, they usually have to regroup, whereas the Korean Tung Sido, using these straight line kicks, you can usually regroup afterwards, even if you miss and so forth. So he saw that that would be an advantage to add to and give the his aspect of what he wanted Lotus to be, in a more rounded aspect.
You helped Mr. Preacher create Lotus Rise by encouragement and talking with him about it. Can you describe a little more about how he decided to quit teaching Kempo per se and start teaching Lotus?
Well, we met one time and he says, "What do you think of my art?" And I said, "Well, sir, I know it's not Kempo, is it?" He says, "No, it's not Kempo." I said, "I didn't think so." I said, I think it's an outstanding art, and you're outstanding, and you should be a grandmaster. You should develop your own art, because having been exposed to other martial arts, I know that I've never seen anything like this except Korean Hapkido, and you're not in Korea, which gives you the ability to be a grandmaster of your own art with the abilities and the skills that you have, which are phenomenal. And he says, "That's a big job." And I said, "Yes, it is, but you should, because you owe it to have an art under Thailand. You know, an art that Thailand can say they developed. Korea has theirs, China has theirs, Japan has theirs, Thailand should have theirs, other than Muay Thai kickboxing, as far as a martial art, because Thai kickboxing is not a martial art. It is a war art, basically." So, and I said, you know, to really appeal to the American public and the American GI, you need an art. And he says, "Only if you will be there and help me do so. With your background in Tung Sido, we'll structure it organization-wise, belt-wise, and so forth, along what you have seen successful in Korea." So I said, "Okay."
And you helped with the belt color system?
The belt color system, the requirements for each belt, many of the what I would call one-step punches, where it's just a straight, where you don't see any actually Muay Thai leg kicking or elbows or knees or so forth. a lot of the self-defense techniques were developed as he and I worked together, and I would do something and he would say, wait a minute, I want to do it this way. And then we would try it that way. And if it had more flavor of the Muay Thai in some aspects, and other times you wanted more flavor of Kung Fu. So you'll see a lot of side kicks, spinning back kicks, downward elbow strikes and strutted elbows up to the face, elbows into the chest before we would move into a takedown or a control. You would see hard movements that would disable an opponent so they wouldn't have to fight you, because we weren't really working on the skills of takedown like Aikido would. We were more concerned about standing up and fighting Muay Thai style, and then adding to that once we disable the opponent.
Do you know how long Mr. Preacher had been teaching Kenpo?
No, I never asked him that. In the fact that he had so few students overall, even the Thais, there were very few of them compared to, you would think, at a Grand Master school. I can't remember over maybe 30 Thais that were in the Thai class at that time. As I said, you know, there were very few Americans, no more than 10, and my two buddies and I joined, making up about 13 at the most. So I think he had basically not been teaching that long, or wasn't exposing himself to the American servicemen at that time. He may have been more dedicated to the Thais, and at that time I remember when I first saw him, he had a Kenpo patch on his uniform and so forth. After he decided he was going to go and be a Grand Master, rightfully so, with the Lotus, he took the Kenpo off. And we just pressed on from there.
He traded the Kenpo patches with Lotus patches.
That's correct.
Did he have any black belts at the time when he first arrived?
None. Okay. None at all. It was strictly him. And I can remember the two Thai nationals that were training with Henry Badgett and myself, and going to test for our black belt with Henry and myself, because there's only going to be four of us in this testing cycle, the first testing cycle of Lotus, that they were one of his original students, and Henry and I were able to catch up with them, although he was much more demanding for his, and very much more slower in promoting his Thai nationals. But we caught up with them, so to speak, and we trained hand in hand. We either joined the Thai national class, or those two would come up into the American class and join us.
Okay. Talking about testing for black belt, you were the first American to test to black belt. Could you describe how that came to be? And could you describe your black belt test?
Well, Henry Badgett and I were supposed to have been the first two Americans, along with the first two Thai nationals. And we were really trying to gear up for the test. Part of our test, I remember, was that we had to teach 3 days of the American class and the Thai national class in Thai only, just about. So our first 3 days of testing was actually in a teaching atmosphere where we were evaluated in our instructor ability and in the example that we set forth in the class. Preacher did not want anybody moving into the black belt level unless he was confident that they could be an instructor on their own. And his standards were extremely high. That's why there was so few of us at that point. My being a second degree black belt, Kung Fu Do, having those 2 years in Korea as a prior training helped me immensely. And Henry was very, very gifted. Badgett, regretfully, he broke his leg somewhere along the way, I can't remember, just before we were actually going to test. And that left him not being able to test, and me being the only American available to test. So myself and two other the Thai nationals finally got to that third day of testing. When we started the test, about, I think it was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Around 8 o'clock is when we finished. And we started out, I remember definitely the exercises was brutal. I remember doing 100 push-ups throughout. Anytime we just said drop down and do push-ups, we had to do 100 push-ups. We had gotten to the point where as going to be black belt candidates, if we ever made a mistake in the studio, we had to do 100 push-ups for every mistake we made. Normally, the white belts did 10 and so forth and so on, and they advanced up to where people were doing 50, 60. But when it came to us, as you're going to be black belts, every time we made a mistake, any mistake whatsoever, get out and do 100 push-ups. So we were doing thousands of push-ups in our training. Mentally, that really does something to somebody when you're able to do 1,000 push-ups in a training session. And so he kept pushing that aspect. We would fight, or we would defend to warm up. Basically, you just were fighting Thai nationals all over the place. As individuals or as a team between the two other Thai nationals that were testing for black belt, myself, he would just end one right after another on top of us, and we could not fight back. All we could do was defend. And he really, really got down to the spirit, can you continue? Then he gets down and do push-ups. And then after all that was done and we could finally fight back, then we started fighting multiple opponents there. And then he started separating us and putting us individuals fighting multiple opponents. By the time we got all that done, he set them down, and now he started working on us as individuals. And the bottom line was, it was now time to have a line of 70 people over there, and 70 people would attack you just one right after another, bang, 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 and you had to do 100 self-defense techniques. From there, I can remember after those 100 self-defense techniques, we had to do 500 judo falls over combinations thereof. And then we had to demonstrate all of the throwing techniques. We had to do all of the, demonstrate all the kicks and multiples of 25. And we had to do all of the forms. We had to do all of the exercises, and it took about 5 hours to get all the way through the test. By the time we got through the test, we were wringing wet, our uniforms were sloppy and nasty and everything from being on that kind of a mat outside. It was quite an experience. I am so glad that I thought ahead, and I coated my body with Absorbing Junior. So, and the Absorbing Junior, when you get hot and you sweat, it goes in deeper and it burns. So I was burning all the way through the test, but it allowed me to stay loose enough that I could push my body to that point. But I'll never forget, especially the last 1,000 push-ups. Because that's how we ended. We could do 100 at a set, but we could only rest 1 minute between the sets. So we did 1,000 push-ups. Finish it off.
Did you test with the Thai National?
Yes.
Or was it one after the other?
No, the Thai National tested with me.
And was there any difference between their test and your test?
No.
Another great accomplishment for you was that you were the first American to open a Lotus school in the United States. I know that you taught Lotus and then you opened a school later on. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Well, like I said, I taught Lotus in Victorville, but it wasn't my studio. I was always either at the YMCA or the USO or something like that. And I always had a goal or a desire to open my own school, but I needed a student base. So I kept trying to build my base. The Lotus would often chase people away. So to try to build a base, I added Kung Fu with it in order to try to keep a base, and then I was kind of teaching both, using the Lotus as our self-defense aspect and using Tung Sado as the way that I could build a base. Korean karate was a big thing. Karate was a big thing, especially with Bruce Lee and around that time. We had hundreds of students. So finally, teaching actually both, I was able to build my base, and I moved off base and established the first school. And I said, now that I finally got my school, I'm writing to the preacher and telling him he now has a Lotus school in the United States, and that was in 1954.
Okay. And you were never able to promote any students to black belt in a Lotus system, were you?
No. Regretfully, before, well, like with my wife, who was a black belt in Kung Sudo, and she made that in 3 years, but she had just, she had come to a blue belt level within Lotus, within the same training aspect. Training is hard because the demands of the Lotus that Creature had set on us was so demanding that it would take 5 to 10 years to make a Lotus black belt, really. So in order to reach that level, it takes a long time to keep the studio open. And regretfully, I heard that we lost Vietnam, and that all of the American servicemen had been pulled out of Thailand, leaving Creature with no base to keep his new studio open. The Americans were the ones who had really had the money. The Thais did not have any money to keep that kind of a studio open and pay for that kind of investment. So I heard the Creature was forced to sell the studio, and his dad had demanded he come back into the mountains, and the Creature had decided that the only thing he could do was do what his father told him to do, come back into the mountains. And Lotus had become no longer with the Grand Master because he was unavailable, and that Lotus had become a dead art. So with that in mind, I had been associated with Mr. C.S. Kim, and he had been pushing me, trying to push me into a third degree black belt. So I went and tested and made my third degree black belt. After making my third degree black belt, I continued to teach for about 13 more years, combination of both, but advancing my students only in Kung Sudo.
And you continue to teach Kung Sudo to this day, correct?
That's correct.
And where do you teach?
Right now, having at this point, until I found your website and John Harrington's website and talking to Mr. Mac Petrie, I thought Lotus was a lost part of my history. And one of my karate students was looking at my certificates on the wall in the studio and saw how proud I was of the Lotus and the position that I had given it, and asked me about it, and found out I was the first American, and they thought, well, that's really neat, you know, and so forth. Decided that they were going to searching on the web to see if they could find if anybody else knew anything about the Lotus. And next thing I know, I get a call almost in the middle of the night, you know, Master Price, you need to go to these websites. Lotus is not dead. And so next thing I know, I'm looking at these websites and I'm crying because, you know, history is still alive. You know, it's not dead. And Lotus was a very intricate part of my development into a real instructor and a real man, and it is still always going to be a part of my self-defense aspect. And my wife especially, she always loved the Lotus techniques and loved what Lotus did for her. And here we are. It's still here. So upon finding that, that's why I contacted you personally and decided that maybe I could help the Lotus revive some of its history since I was part of it.
And you're definitely helping by just talking to us right now. And you say that you found that Lotus was still alive from the internet, from the websites, correct?
Had there not been a website where my students could find it, I would still have believed to date that Lotus was a dead art, that I was a part of history, that it's just that, history, because Creature was unavailable. I didn't even know if he was still alive. Any of the people who had come to me were always of a ranking that I never heard from them again, no matter what their ranks were. Only a couple of black belts had come over, and I knew that, you know, I know there's no way an art can survive with only 3 black belts in the United States or something like that. So yeah, I believe that Lotus was just something that was in my
website continues to find people like you and Badgett and Huck Day and many others out there that are first generation Lotus Black under Mr. Creature.
Well, if I'm here still, I think that there's other aspects of our history that's still out there also, and I'm hoping that they too will find the website and that Lotus will get its just due, because it was a phenomenal art. At one point, we were told that before we lost Vietnam, that there was more increase of threat to the Americans who were in Thailand, and that we were going to be sent to the jungle to teach the Thai border guard to use this in a war-type atmosphere. And of course, we were getting war-orientated. The Lotus, when its original development, was very brutal. It was incapacitating. It was to destroy your opponent. It was to annihilate an attacker. It was to be used in a war-type environment where you're fighting for your life. That was the Lotus. And therefore, when you look at that kind of an art, there's no way you can put it in competition. And because of its brutality, it didn't fit within the legalities of the United States very much, you know, in its original raw aspect. And that's, we were being trained to go into the jungle, if you will, in the border. And it didn't happen that way. Instead, they sent a bunch of officers to us, to the Lotus School, Henry and I, and Ajahn, Preetamon Chanavan, and some of the other Thai nationals were responsible for about 2 weeks of training for these officers to go in and teach Lotus to their men out in the jungle to fight against the Thai Kong.
I noticed that on your right hand there, you're wearing a gold Lotus ring. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yes. My ring has the number 004B. That meant black belt number 4. And it was a special design ring that Preacher said that if he ever received any correspondence to make it official, it should have the insignia of the Lotus style Ubon Thailand symbol embedded on the letter, that he would know it was from me, because there was only, all these rings were only going to be given to those that were the black belt instructor level. This is the ring that Preacher himself gave to me upon awarding me my black belt.
Very nice.
Badgett has number 3, I think, and the first two ties, of course, as respect to the Thai nationals, got 1 and 2.
Is there a particular message you would like to share with Lotus practitioners?
Yes. Lotus is a very special art with a very special background, and in honor of Preetamon Chanavan, I think we should do everything we can to make sure that man receives the honor that he should have. He gave a lot to the American servicemen, and he also respected a lot of the aspects of our lifestyle and what we stood for. He and I talked many times about what the American servicemen meant to Thailand, meant to him, meant to his family, and so forth. And I have always greatly respected the man for how much he felt that we had an important part in the history of Thailand, in the defense of Thailand, and in the defense of the United States. And anybody and everybody that shares the Lotus is sharing that heritage that is such a close bond between two countries that shared a common enemy. And I just pray and hope that everybody who studies the Lotus will take it to heart and give it what it deserves. And basically, that's everything a person can give in their mental and physical state to become the best that they can with the techniques and the philosophy that the Lotus was originally developed with.
Well, Mr. Price, it's been my pleasure meeting you, talking with you. I thank you very much for doing this interview.
You're more than welcome, and I thank you for this opportunity. As I said, it's almost like I'm reborn again. Because when part of you is dead, and then you find out that it's alive, it's a very unique experience. And Lotus is a very important part of me.